Hello and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are once again looking at Danish director Suzanne Bier in her hit 2006 film After the Wedding. Returning on the show today to talk about After the Wedding is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, off bat, I really enjoyed this movie and I really liked it. But one thing I was taking in my notes, I was just imagining there's so many ways this movie could have been done poorly. Now, it's done very well, but with a story like this of he's the real father, I mean, it seems like a plot line that had to have been on at least one soap opera, like General Hospital or Days of Our Lives or one of those.
Right, and let's not have the reveal until everyone's grown and there's a wedding and a death about to happen. Yes, stakes up.
And then one person would go crazy. Like, I'm just like running through my head, like, you know, they try to kill the dad or the mom, but the daughter gets in the way of the bullet and she dies. I could just imagine so many ways this would be like a really cheesy melodrama or soapy movie, but it's done very well. And I gotta give the hands to the director, Suzanne Bier. She did a great job making it subtle and not making it. It's done in a realistic way where doesn't have to be a bad guy or a bad woman.
That's a good point. That is a really good point, because there really are no bad people in this one. There's no choice between good and evil like there was in Brothers. But, you know, we talked about this with Brothers, that Suzanne Bier really likes to take some sort of transformational process and give you a real close-up of how it affects all the people around the person who it's happening to.
Yeah, and just watching this, nobody really acts horribly. Like, they all act like adults in the situation. Nobody goes like, you kind of say, well, I could be like, you know, I can understand that situation. Like, even when she hides the truth from him, that's a father, like, well, he cheated on her with her best friend. They were young. You know, she thought he wasn't, you know, you can understand maybe why she didn't tell him the news. And you can also see why Mads Mikkelsen's extremely upset, and you can also see why the father is, you know, treating things the way he does. Like, nobody goes like, well, they're just mean or they're just nasty or something.
You can see everybody's agenda.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was talking about how it never felt too melodramatic or soap opera-ish. Did at any point, did even just felt just a little bit, did it feel like it for you, or did you feel it was treated very well?
I thought it was treated well, but like you say, the elements of the story do sound like classic melodrama. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it could have gone to the dark side so easily. But it's done very delicately, and it's done with a lot of twos. Things arrive in two. So even though it's not a movie where I can tell my students, like, look for the differences between the choices between good and evil and what that means, Suzanne Bier just sets things up in two so that you can compare them yourselves. There's two scenes in India, one at the beginning of the first part and one at the end of the second part, both comprising the same elements, orphanage, children, taxi. There's two celebrations, Anna's wedding and Jorn's birthday, both using the same sequence, music, speech, dance. There's two adopted children. There's two openings of the safe, two birthdays at the end of the second part. So, you know, there's lots of opportunities to compare which life is he going to choose, because Mads Mikkelsen's character in the end has to make a pretty big decision.
Yeah, and one thing that was interesting I noticed about the film, it's when he's at the very end of the film and he's bringing the kid who's sort of been like his adopted son, Pramod. And he's asking, like, you know, you can stay with me if you want. And he goes, no. And he kind of says, you don't like these people. You've always said you don't like these, you know, the rich people, the hoity-toityness or whatever it is. And it almost feels like that's his fault, like that's Mads Mikkelsen's fault, because he's said this so many times that because of this, that he's not, you know, the kid that he cares about, he can't take care of him anymore. And I feel it almost feels like that's sort of a lesson he's learned now, that maybe not every rich person's a stuck-up person who just cares about money or something.
That might have been the only part of the movie that I thought was a little too melodramatic. He couldn't bridge that gap between the kid. It seemed a little convenient that the kid let him off the hook, which meant he could go on to do, you know, big things. In real life, I can't imagine the kid not wanting to go with him.
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit of the kid, you know, feeling betrayed that, you know, he promised him that he would be there on his birthday and he didn't show up, and that he was gone a lot longer. I'm assuming he was gone a lot longer than he had planned it to be on that trip. So maybe the kid still feels a little bit of betrayal. Maybe that's why he doesn't want to stay with him. Maybe that's probably just conjecture for me.
But. Yeah, I don't know that we're meant to think about it again once this decision's been made. Everybody seems happy with the choice. Mm-hmm. But I always felt like that didn't really ring true. That was the only false note.
Okay. And then so one of the characters, and it's an actor who I'm a big fan of, is Mads Mikkelsen.
Me too.
And he's great in this film, and he's pretty much great in everything. And I talked a little bit about Connie Nielsen in Brothers, how she can go from these small Danish films and then do something, you know, big like Gladiator or Wonder Woman. Mads Mikkelsen is pretty much the same thing. He can do these low-budget movies like After the Wedding or The Hunt, which is, once again, I highly recommend, great movie. Or he can do, like, he can be a Bond villain in Casino Royale. He can be a Marvel villain in Doctor Strange. He can be a character in a Star Wars movie. He can be Hannibal Lecter. I mean, the guy can do everything. That's why I think he's such a great actor. And he's just, I'm always down to see anything that guy does.
He's also in Rihanna's music video for Bitch Better Have My Money. As her accountant, the song's titular bitch, he stole from her. So he really can do everything. Yeah, he was Igor Stravinsky in the Coco Chanel movie. Hmm. Yeah, there's really nothing this man can't do.
Yeah, just, and he's, once again, he's very good in this film because you can tell he's a bleeding heart, so to speak. You know, he's always
the sensitive guy.
Sensitive guy who's always thinking everything about causes and everything. And you can tell he sort of has low tolerance for people who aren't as bought in as he is. I think that's probably what pushed him away from his the woman, and then probably pushed him away from other people just because he's too dedicated and, you know, he never has time for anything else.
Oh, in this movie.
In the movie, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And they sort of play up that sort of strong, silent type that he epitomizes. He does mm-hmm. look like he is completely in charge of everything. Next week, we'll talk about him in A Royal Affair, another movie where he totally commands the movie. Even though he's not really the main character, he's the one you remember.
Mm-hmm. And just even like, you know, something like, yeah, once again, like the Hannibal series, a lot of times he wasn't the main bad guy. But every time you're always just stuck to him because he could just play it so well. And even something like Casino Royale, I'm just a big fan of Mads Mikkelsen. Anything that guy does, it's going to be good.
It's going to be good. You know, originally he was a gymnast and a dancer.
Really?
Yes. And then he decided to become an actor. And then he did a bunch of TV work. He was a pusher in a TV series. Played a lot of like down and out kind of characters. Oh, and if you really like Mads Mikkelsen and you haven't seen it yet, you should watch The Green Butchers.
The Green Butchers.
Very, very weird. I'll just say that it's not unlike Soylent Green in its own way.
Okay, I'll do like Soylent Green. I'll have to check it out.
It's not science fiction, though. It's just, it's sort of like Delicatessen. Did you ever see that movie?
Mm-mm.
Well, we're just going to bend your mind to a couple of weird movies.
It's a more cannibalism, like in Hannibal?
Sort of. The gist of The Green Butchers is that there's a reason why those steaks are so good. We'll just leave it at that for now.
I'm intrigued.
But prepare yourself. Yes, but he pulls that off too with that sort of, you know, because he's got that great face with those incredible cheekbones. Mm-hmm. You know, when he just looks at the camera and isn't even smiling, he just has an amazing face. You just want to mm-hmm. look at it.
Yeah, he can be like, you know, he's versatile. He can be like somebody who's just, he could be somebody who's completely evil, like the Bond villain or Hannibal Lecter, or it can be somebody who's a good guy, you know, who's just gone through a lot and he's just worn down, like The Hunt, or even in this movie. It could just be
be every man.
Every man. He's really good.
Yeah, and I wonder how much the training in gymnastics and in dance help him with that projection. You know, because mm-hmm. when you're doing those things, you need to, while you're moving, you need to project your personality. And that comes from how you hold your face. Mm-hmm.
And then another actress she's been in a few things outside in Denmark is, I'll mispronounce it, Sidse Knudsen?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, got it right.
Knudsen.
But that was why I told you before we recorded, I was watching her, I was like, man, she looks really familiar. And I was looking at all her movies, nope, nope, nope. But then it was said, oh, she was in Westworld. Like, yep. So just another actress. Like, she's another good actress. I liked her in Westworld, and I think she's good in this movie, too.
Yeah, I think she's a terrific actress.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, have you seen Westworld?
I have not seen Westworld. Is this something else I need to binge watch?
Yes, you got to binge watch it, definitely. And she's good in it, and she is takes part in a very big twist. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
So besides those two other performances that stand out, I didn't quite get the name of the guy who plays Yorn. Yeah, Yorn.
He's terrific, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head either, but he is wonderful as a guy who is surprisingly open to thinking about what's going to happen to his family after he's gone and not necessarily wanting them to spend all their time grieving him. He wants the best for them. Mm-hmm. Which is sort of an unusual epiphany to come to at his age.
Yeah, it's sort of unusual that he wants Mads Mikkelsen, the one to take in his place. Like, oh, you're the one who's the real biological father who used to, you know, have relations with my wife before I met her. A lot of people wouldn't be that comfortable exactly. Just like having someone take my place like that quickly after I die. But he's like completely setting it up and he wants it to happen, which is a very interesting way.
And I think that's actually the crux of the movie, is that these two men are interchangeable. And I don't think either one of them is 100% comfortable with that fact, but they have made their peace with that fact. And it's an interesting idea to put across because I don't know that that's been done before.
So like interchangeable, like they can take each other's lives.
Yeah, like, you know, after I'm out, you know, you're in. Just step right into my shoes, as if he's not even concerned about being, you know, forgotten about. Like, one guy is as good as another guy.
Sort of like that movie you showed me a while ago, it was Man on a Train.
Yes.
Kind of like that.
Yeah, a little different, though, because the guys had two really different lives, and they each wanted each other's life. This one is sort of like saying, you know, the head of the family is interchangeable. It could be this guy or this guy. It's the other characters that seem to be like the permanent ones. But the guy at the top can just be, you know, slotted in. Mm-hmm. Sort of reminds me a little bit of The Boss of It All when you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody could play the part. You just have to learn the lines and find out what has been promised that you have apparently said.
And so... besides those three, the daughter, I was looking at her acting career. It's like one or like two other roles. Like, it doesn't seem like she's done a heck of a lot after this.
I haven't seen her in other things either.
Okay. And it's, well, I talked a little bit about this earlier when we talked about Brothers, but one thing I liked about this movie is, since this movie is heavily dependent on, you know, earth-shattering information, like, you're the father and you're not the father. Or I have this terminal illness, I'm going to die soon, all this stuff.
Or I'm lost in Afghanistan. No, I'm not. I'm back.
Yeah, she does this interested method of storytelling where she doesn't necessarily have the big scene when, you know, they're telling you he's your father or, you know, that stuff. It's not that, it's always right after they say that. It's just watching the actresses or actors, you know, how they handle the emotion.
Yeah.
And I always thought that's really, once again, an interesting way to do of storytelling. It's they're not just having that big scene. It's just after it and just seeing how people react to it.
Like after the wedding, like the title.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not so much about the wedding, but what happens afterwards, which you don't really see, interestingly, now that I think about it. The whole buildup is for something that happens after the credits have rolled, in a way.
Mm-hmm. And so... after speculating, do you think that new family will last? It seems that, you know, I'm pretty sure that Mads Mikkelsen's going to take his place, that he might remarry or marry her, and they're going to have the family together. Do you think it'll last, or do you think maybe there was a reason why they broke up? Maybe they weren't meant to be. Maybe he will go back to philandering or whatever, or he just can't stay there, and he's going to go back to India to help out with the orphanage.
You know, I think Mads Mikkelsen's character in this movie could be Jan from Brothers Grown Up. Mm-hmm. Because he does seem like he has had that sort of carefree life, but now he's ready to settle down and, you know, do the right things. Both films have two couples in stable household situations that are then sort of upended by events. Mm-hmm. And both films have a second male character who's related to the couple. And is accepted by the children before the woman of the house. So that must be her methodology of presenting this sort of situation, because she's done it twice.
That, you know, once the children sort of warm up to this, then the parents will sort of follow along.
Exactly. Okay. So it sort of becomes the children's story in a way, just to get them on board. And then the wife, mother character is the last one to fall in line. And then, of course, there's more information that comes that makes her have to make further decisions.
Mm-hmm. And once again, showing how subtly she handles situations like this, with the situation of the father dying and terminal. Once again, worser films, it would have a scene on his deathbed and everybody's crying and he goes, "Promise me you'll do this."
Or yes, promise me you'll be the man that I couldn't be. Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's something very, once again, trying to hammer the nail home. And she doesn't do that, which once again shows her talents as a director and as a storyteller.
And to avoid what I think would be like the chick flick sort of scene like that.
Mm-hmm. Something like a really like sappy romance, like Steel Magnolias or Fried Green Tomatoes.
Right, or you know, telling his wife on his deathbed, you know, I loved you more than anything, and but you know, please go on without me, mm-hmm. like no one would ever say.
It sounds like The Notebook 2 or something.
The Notebook 2, although I do love that movie.
And we talked about it earlier. This was a film of hers that got a lot of buzz. It was an Oscar-nominated film, but it lost to a film I really like. Now, I love this is a great film, but when it comes to putting up to these two, The Lives of Others, I got to give it to Lives of Others, and that's what beat it out for best foreign film that year at the Oscars. Lives of Others is a fantastic movie.
It is.
And I would highly recommend, this is another film I highly recommend. It's a great film about just somebody who's in a system and just who is a dedicated member of it. This is the East German government during mm-hmm. the communist era. And I think he starts to see humanity and he just completely changes his view. And it's such a good, that's all I'm going to say, but very, very good movie. Watch this movie too, but also watch The Lives of Others, because I can't recommend that movie highly enough.
Yeah, after The Wedding though, the good thing about that movie is that even though not every story arc ends happily, you know, one mm-hmm. guy dies, you know, one kid's left behind, you still feel at the end that, for the most part, it was an uplifting story.
Mm-hmm.
There were enough resolved situations that you feel, on the whole, that it was not a complete downer of a movie. Whereas Brothers, as effective as it is and as terrific a movie as I think it is, it's hard to watch. Mm-hmm. It's not a movie you would watch over and over. Save mm-hmm. stuff. You've seen it a couple times. You wouldn't say to somebody, "Oh, you got to sit down and watch this movie with me."
Yeah.
But you might do that with After the Wedding, knowing that the unusual storylines and how they're resolved might be interesting to watch again.
Yeah, but with Brothers, I would say that you do get a happy ending somewhat at the end of that film. It's not, he goes to prison, but he doesn't kill, you know, he doesn't go full on where he does something extremely horrible like kill his, he doesn't do it. He goes to prison before it happens, but it seems that he's finally able to open up to his wife what he did. He's crying to her, and I think he's going to be able to move on. He's now able to move on and cope with it, and I think, at least in that movie, it seems like the ending is going to be happier and it's going to go back to normal like it used to be before he left.
I think one of the reasons I think that ending works so well in Brothers is because since we've opened with the other brother getting out of prison and you end with, you know, Ulrich Thompson's character being locked up, you understand what happened to Ulrich Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
You know that that was an aberration in his life, but there are reasons why he did what he did. It leaves you at the end thinking, wow, I wonder if there's more to know about the other brother. Maybe he had reasons for what he did as well, but we didn't see all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it does at least raise that question, which is good for a class where you're trying to talk about existentialism, because it makes you mm-hmm. examine all the reasons why people do the things that they do.
And so talking a little bit more about Suzanne Bier, we've been talking a lot about Brothers, so I won't go into more detail about that, but if you talked a little bit about In a Better World, and that was the film that's probably her most accoladed because it got her an Oscar win. So tell us a little bit more about that film. I know you say you like it, but it's compared to Brothers and After the Wedding, it's your least favorite of hers.
It is my least favorite of those three, although it's a very powerful movie. It's a movie about revenge, and it has some of my favorite actors in it. It's got Kim Bodnia in it, who's in China, They Eat Dogs. It has Ulrich Thompson in it. So it's got lots of great actors in it. But the story is about two kids, And, you know, that's also an existential story. Are you going to be the good kid? Or are you going to be the bad kid? Are you going to follow the kid who is going to lead you the wrong way? Or are you going to be the force for helping that kid be a better person? It all of the acting is on the shoulders of these two kids, and they aren't as good of actors as Kim Bodnia and Ulrich Thompson. I mean, they're children. They're they're good, but it's hard to relate to what they're going to the way you do with Ulrich Thompson and Brothers, or even Mads Mikkelsen's dilemmas in After the Wedding, which are really adult problems. The movie ends up showing you the parents and how they're, what they do affects the kids, but it's really a dark story. I mean, one of the kids' dads is, he's got a dual story. You know, one, he's a doctor in, like, sort of a Doctors Without Borders things in Africa, really making a difference. And then he's trying to teach his kid that, you know, you don't fight back. And he ends up being beat up in front of his kid.
Oh,
you know, while he's trying to, you know, make this point about being a good person. It's really, really tough stuff. I mean, when Suzanne Beer said she wanted to tackle more serious subjects in the more dark way, she really got there in this because you really, and in a dark way, unlike, you know, what we discussed with Brothers, but things that are really about the darker side of ourselves, the things that we do or are willing to let happen.
Even a little bit like a Dogville.
No, it doesn't go that far. But when I did show this in my class, the year after it won the Academy Award, at the end of the semester when the students voted, they hated that movie.
In a Better World?
They didn't like it at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it doesn't do well in my classroom, so I took it out. And I think partly it's because the kids in the movie are too young for them. You know, they're past those issues. You know, they want to see things about young adults or adults because that's where they are. It's hard to sell that movie unless you're broad-minded enough to say, well, let's look at the situation from a child's perspective. It does have one wonderful scene, though, as a school project where they're making a replica of the Round Tower, which is a famous landmark in Copenhagen. And I show that clip to my students who go on the trip. So it was like, look, they're making a replica. This is what you would do if you were a Danish student doing things with paper mache, and then you go see the real thing.
Hmm. Cool. And, one thing I forgot to bring up. I was looking at my notes. Did you think that Jorgen knew beforehand that Jacob was the father? Do you think the reason why he had him come over for that meeting originally and said, oh, come by the wedding, you know, do you think like he asked him, did you know beforehand? Was this on purpose? Do you think he knew or was this just a coincidence?
I think he knew.
Yeah, I have a feeling too.
He was just such a, you know, he was setting everything up. Mm-hmm. So I think he had all the puzzle pieces.
Yeah, I think he wasn't. But it wasn't like, you know, in a way like, you know, you lied to me. You knew this all along. This is the father or anything like that. He's just like, I need to bring you guys together because I know I'm probably not going to be around here much longer. Like you said.
Right. Just cutting right to the chase. Right. With what he knew.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Anything, getting close to the end of my questions here. Anything else that I haven't discussed that you want to bring up now?
About this
either this film movie? Or Suzanne Beer?
Well, what do you think about the idea that the male element of the family doesn't have to be unique and can be interchangeable? Did that come across to you, this sort of idea that, I mean, it's almost polyandrous. You know, this one woman is going to have two husbands.
I think in this situation that they can be changed is because his connection with the wife, you know, that they've had this child together. And that, you know, the way they handled it, and, you know, like I said, nobody in this movie is really a bad person, I guess, wouldn't be that big a deal. But, and especially since it's getting his blessing. It's not like she's doing it without his blessing or she's going against the wishes or whatever. I guess I would say that maybe in this situation, but overall in like a typical situation like that, probably not, just because every father or anybody has their own distinct personality and having kids and everybody grows up with them, it'd be really hard for anybody to take the place immediately right after they die.
Unless it was an old flame. I mean, I think that's why they set that up that way. But do you think that the wife wants Mads Mikkelsen back?
I do think so, because remember, they do have that one scene when they're talking together and they're laughing and they're having a good time. And you can see that they're rekindling that relationship that, you know, and it's, you know, what, you know, the stuff he did, he cheated on her, everything, in the way that was 20 years ago. So maybe the test of time has passed, where, you know, she's not going to keep on holding a grudge against him. Maybe she's willing to give him another chance. At least that's how I feel.
Yeah, maybe it is another chance because, you know, he is there when his daughter has, you know, the big reveal mm-hmm. about her own wedding in a way that he's not able to do for the little boy in India. You know, he's sort mm-hmm. of a fill-in father. And then the second time he gets to do this with this, it's his actual daughter.
Yeah, and he's definitely, to see him, he definitely wants to be there for her, for his daughter. Like, you know, like that scene even sets up the dinner where she's showing him all her family photos, and she goes, "Oh, this one's a bit silly." He's like, no, I want to see all of these. You can show them to me. And you feel that he's definitely has that care and affection for her.
Yeah, I think that comes across.
Okay, so last question I'll have is, you talk about this film. Do you bring this film into classes, or?
I don't, because I can't show enough of it to get the idea across. You know, there's so much that happens over the sprawling time. You have to choose what you want to show. And what I want to show in the class where I talk about Scandinavian film is examples of existentialism that lead into In China, They Eat Dogs. And Brothers does that really well. I do mention this movie, but I don't show any clips from it.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about Danish director Suzanne Bier and her 2006 film, After the Wedding. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Professor Westhead, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying you're an angry man. That's good. It gives you lots of drive.